Our chalice lighting talked about eyes that witness the miraculous, that eyes that are aware of the miracles and the budding flowers. So I wanted to celebrate this warm weather we've had this week and the garden that I planted this week at my house with a story about some flowers. I have an annual spiritual practice of setting out into the wilderness for at least a few days every year with a couple good friends of mine. And one of the more adventurous trips that we ever took was to go spend a week hiking and canoeing on an island in the middle of Lake Superior. And to get there, we had to drive north from Chicago, straight north for 10 hours, where we would catch a ferry to the island. And we got to this moment on the trip there where we were about exactly 10 minutes from the little town where we would catch the ferry. And we had an hour and 10 minutes exactly before the ferry left. And so we were going to get into town and get some breakfast and sort out the mess of stuff that we had piled into the car for this trip. But this moment came where one of my friends in the car stopped our conversation and said, "How come my cell phone has a different time than the car dashboard?" And we thought about it, and we realized that even though we had been driving straight north, we had crossed from Wisconsin into the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and Michigan is a different time zone than Wisconsin. So we had an hour less than we thought we did. We had exactly 10 minutes before the ferry left, and we were exactly 10 minutes away. And mind you, the next ferry didn't leave for another 2 or 3 days. So we did the only reasonable thing to do in a situation like that, which is to sit in utter silence and fear, gripping the door of the car while one of us drove at 50 miles an hour through the back roads and hills of the Wisconsin woods. And we just sat and didn't say a word until we got to the dock. But you will be happy to know that we made it in time. We pulled into the parking lot of the dock just as the ship was getting ready to leave. And I remember this large man on the boat pointing at us while we were still in the car and said, "You guys, get out of the car, into the boat, leave the keys in the ignition, and we'll park it for you." And I thought, well, we're not going to see this car for a week. But okay, we gathered up our stuff, we threw it onto the boat, we got onto the boat, we took a deep breath, and it wasn't... Well, it wasn't until we got to the island a few hours later that we started to look around at all the stuff we had brought. We had a mountain of stuff that we didn't need, that we were going to be carrying on our backs for a week on this island. And then we started to think of all of the things we did need that we had left back in the car. Things like a pot to boil our water in, to cook our food, and things like a replacement for our broken water filter so we could have clean water. So we started to get a little nervous about this trip. But this incredible thing happened over the next few days, which was that at every point on the trip, when we got to the point where we needed one of those things the most, someone appeared and had one for us. Someone gave us a pot to boil our water in. They loaned it to us for the week. Someone else happened to have the exact same model of water filter that we needed just when we needed it. And what was even more fun for us was that for each of those people, we had all this extra stuff that we were literally trying to get off of our backs that we could give back to them. So the guy with the water pot, we gave him and his son 6 chocolate bars, which we had in addition to the 6 that we had for ourselves. And the guy who had the water filter, well, we gave him and his group about 5 pounds of fresh vegetables, which was something they hadn't seen in a week. So at every step, we were able to meet people that had this same attitude of, we're in it together. An attitude that's a lot easier to have in the wilderness. We're in it together. But of all of those gifts that went back and forth during that whole week in the woods on that island, there was one that stuck with me the most. And that was that first night when we finally got to our campsite. We were exhausted and we were stressed out from the journey. And I remember coming around this bend into our campsite and looking up, lifting my head, and seeing this grove of wildflowers. And maybe it was just the day I'd had, but they were the most beautiful wildflowers I'd ever seen. And I just froze standing on the ground there in awe at this beauty. And I don't want to say that I heard a voice. But we'll say that I heard a message. And the message was simply, these are for you. These are for you. Like someone had just walked into the room and handed me a gold gem out of nowhere. Not because I had earned it, but just because I was there. And so I just stood in awe, and that moment was incredible. I was overwhelmed by the beauty that was gifted to me. But what has stuck with me is not just the gift of that beauty, but for me, the more important gift of a practice of gratitude, that I can recognize those gifts that come not just in faraway islands in the middle of giant lakes, but now I've learned to pay a little better attention to how those gifts come in the trees and the wind when I'm walking through the city in Boston, or even more so in the friendships and relationships that I have in my life. And the incredible thing about this kind of gratitude is that it goes deeper than just getting something you've earned or worked for. It's almost because I didn't earn it that these kinds of gifts are so deep, that they fill me so completely. In the Christian tradition, there's a word for this, which is grace, which is the concept that just because you were made in the image of God, you have access to heaven above in the next life. And I think we have a similar doctrine in Unitarian Universalism, which says that just because you are a sacred part of the interdependent web of all creation, you have access to blessings, untold blessings, in heaven below in this life. And I think that brings us back to the Margaret Atwood poem, when she talks about arriving at the end of your long journey and you finally stand in the center of your island and you say, I own this. That's the moment when the trees and the wind move away from you and they say, no, you don't own this. You never found us. We never belonged to you. It was always the other way around. And I think the poet is reminding us what a gift it is that as much as we spend so much of our weeks trying to accumulate stuff, get more things to put in our pockets and our purses and carrying things with us and our backpacks that we do not need, filling our closets with more stuff, it's a reminder that there are gifts that are so big and so beautiful that we can't even carry them with us. We can't pack them in. We can't take them out. We can only visit them, and we can only touch them, and we can only really experience them when we pass them on. These gifts of love, of compassion, all of the things that we gather on Sunday mornings here to remind ourselves and each other about. I thought I would share a reading with you that talks a little bit about this division between the shriveling anxieties that our prayer spoke of, the little possessions that distract us from the grand blessings of life. So I brought the one self-help book that I own. It's called How Not to Get Rich. I recommend it. And I thought I would read from a chapter entitled How to Handle One Particular Life Move Called Marriage So That You Don't Wake Up One Day and Suddenly Discover That You're Rich. Marry for love, it says. Love can be a crucial factor in not getting rich. Because the one thing you can absolutely count on for love is to lead you on a path of distracting bliss, to a situation of unwealthy emotional strength, wherein you gaze out on the world of commerce and finance and shrug. I don't know about this guarantee of distracting bliss in partnerships or marriage, but unwealthy emotional strength. This sacred text, I think, speaks to a division that we find in almost all of the world's traditions, a division between the small possessions, the grasping at an ownership society, getting our piece of the pie, and another path, which is to share more and focus our hearts on the things that really matter to us, the things that bring us a more long-term joy, a more sustainable peace. And we do see this in all of the world's traditions. The Tao Te Ching talks about it saying, "The one who saves shall suffer great loss, But rather, creating without claiming is a primal virtue. Creating without claiming is a primal virtue. A primal virtue is how Lao Tzu calls it in Taoism. In the Christian tradition, these are called the gifts of the Spirit. Gifts that are so great and so powerful that they can only come from the Holy Spirit. You can't accumulate them. You can't hold on to them too tight. That only makes them smaller. And we see this in so many faith traditions. Abraham Joshua Heschel, speaking of his Jewish faith community, says that harsh and bitter are the problems that religion has come to solve. Problems of ignorance and fear and malice. Problems of agony and despair. These are real problems that we struggle with, that we gather up over the week and sometimes carry into church with us on Sunday. But he says, problems like this can't be solved with generalities and philosophical symbols. Our problem as religious people, he says, is do we believe what we confess? Do we mean what we say? I live in a Unitarian Universalist housing cooperative in Boston. There's 13 of us that share an 11-bedroom, 5,000-square-foot house. We divide up the chores and the utility bills and the food. And for me, living in this house has been a struggle between the ownership society and covenantal community, between getting my piece of the pie and sharing enough to go around. And for me, it's not so much about having enough stuff that I struggle with, although I do struggle with that. But in a community like that, it's more the ownership of a community that can be hard. Sometimes, I'll be honest, I want things to be done my way. I know this doesn't happen in your congregation, but sometimes I think other people ought to run their committee the way I want them to run it, right? You may have heard of such a thing in other faith communities. But what helps me with it, I found, is that we have spiritual practice as a core value of our community. And one thing we've started is that every Sunday evening after dinner, we gather together and we sing together. And we sing for a couple hours. And that's always a nice thing, but my favorite part is when we get to the end, because we always end every Sunday night singing with Amazing Grace. We sing all the verses all the way through. It takes forever. But when we get to the end, we sing that last verse, and we usually take hands for the last verse, and we sing, the wonders of accepting love have made me whole and real. And when we finish, we breathe in together. And we breathe out together and open our eyes and we look at each other. And we look every person at every person around the room. We don't need to plan that. It just happens. And we see each other with new eyes because that practice of being together and singing together is part of how we turn our hearts towards the gifts of the Spirit. And we find that the more we turn our hearts towards the gift of the Spirit, the more we create that kind of community that allows us to do that, the less the little things, the little difficulties of ownership seem to fade away. And they don't matter so much anymore because we have a blessing that is so much greater than filling up our pockets or our needs with those little things. And I think that's what we have a chance to do in Unitarian Universalism, that we can come together in our congregations, and every Sunday, after a long week of colleagues and advertisements and TV telling us all of the things we ought to buy to help soften the pain we may carry, to help fill any emptiness we may feel, we can struggle with that all week, and then we can come together and we can create the kind of communities that have a radical refocusing of our attention. And we can come together and help one another turn our hearts towards the gifts of the Spirit. Turn our hearts towards the infinite, renewable resources of love and compassion, the practice of gratitude. And when we create that kind of magic in our communities here, we can go out into the world together and we can carry it with us all throughout the week. And when we do that, we can fortify our souls so that we can transform the world from the world as it is to the world as we might imagine it together. We can fortify our souls when we turn our hearts towards the gift of the Spirit, and we can transform the world from the world as it is to the world as we might imagine it. May it be so.